Why isn't this working? Oh, I know why. I hit the wrong button. Now I did the right button. I think after all this time I get good at it. Okay. And we are live. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the first time in 2 years there is an online and in-person audience. This is very exciting. I almost want to say l'chaim or something. All right, so I'll say l'chaim and some hot water. L'chaim. And I'm not discounting you out there. So we'll continue to do things online, and hopefully we'll continue to be in person. Today we are going to learn a fascinating little Mishnah and a lot of Gemara, explaining, elaborating, and clarifying what the Mishnah says. So those of you who here can open your Gemara to Meseches Psachim, the 10th chapter, which is called Arvei Psachim. Arvei Psachim means the evenings of Pesach, because it's on the evening or night of Pesach that we have the privilege of sitting together and fulfilling many mitzvahs of the Torah, including things like telling the story of the Exodus to our children, to our grandchildren. And there's a lot of edible mitzvahs too. So today we are going to focus on the end of the Seder, or at least the end of the edible part, the conclusion of dinner. We're still at the table. After this, there's lots of singing, and there's still a little bit of wine that's drunk, but nothing else is eaten. How do we know? How do we know nothing else is eaten? Look in the good book and you find out. Okay, so it's Kuf Yotes, page 119, side B. And if you're following along in the art scroll version, it's 119B2. And you'll see it says Mishnah. We're going to open with a pithy little Mishnah. Very short Mishnah. It only has five words in it. But this Mishnah with five words is filled with information. And you are going to end up right in front of the camera, unless you go to the side. But if you come around this side and you grab yourself a Gemara, you will not appear on candid camera. So I put the Gemaras on the side here. 119, you got the right book? 119B, yeah, it's at the end. B2. 119b2. So we gathered around the table and we recounted all kinds of exciting things. And then we ate. Oh boy, did we eat. We had matzah, and then we had maror. And if that wasn't enough, then we had a matzah maror sandwich. And then we ate. You gotta eat. It's only about midnight by now. And then we finish eating, and then we have dessert. And then we go back to some sacred consumption. And that is where our Mishnah picks up. Says the Mishnah, which is going to talk about the conclusion of the meal of the Passover Seder dinner. However, I must tell you that this Mishnah is not speaking about the Passover Seder dinner as we enjoy it today, but rather it's talking about the Seder as it used to be experienced in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. And in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there were some very big differences. First and the second one. And very interestingly, what we're talking about doesn't even necessarily require a Beis HaMikdash. All it requires is a Mizbeach, an altar, that's built in the right place, so that we have the right to bring a korban. But that's a subject for another day. The next time that we will eat the korban Pesach, it will be from a Beis HaMikdash. Of this I am certain. I don't know if it's going to be this year. I hope it's going to be this year. And that's a much more fun Seder because you have steak. There's roast beef at the Seder, right? Or I should say, you're vegetarian. Well, you're going to have to become ois vegetarian when Mashiach comes for one night a year. It's a mitzvah to eat the Korban Pesach. You'll be surprised when Mashiach comes, the things you're going to do. Sam, you're going to do a lot of amazing things when Mashiach comes. L'chaim. One of them is eat the Korban Pesach. All right. So the Mishnah says like this. Ein maftirin. Ein maftirin achar ha-Pesach afikoman. What does ein maftirin mean? What does this mean? So in the 10th chapter of Masechet Pesachim, here, you want to, this is a, no. Same for Ronnie. Ron, page 119. B2. We have in the 10th chapter of Masechet Pesachim the commentary from both Rashi and his grandson Rashbam. And I'm going to share both with you. So Rashi says, what does this mean, maftirin? What is maftir? It's a word that many people are familiar with because there's something called the Haftorah in the Shul on Shabbat Kodesh and on fast days. But that's not what we're talking about here. It's not a reading. Maftirin, I mean, the reason we call that reading a Haftorah is not different from the reason in this Mishnah. We're just not talking about a reading here. Maftirin, Rashi says, is Lashoin Haniftar Mechaveroi, one who takes leave of his companion. To take leave of a companion is to be Niftar. To take leave of a people forever, meaning until Mashiach comes, is also to be nifter. Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about here. And it means to leave. So when a person leaves life behind, that's called nifter. He's left the table, so to speak. He's no longer in the program. But if we were sitting around the same table, and then we would take leave of each other, that means it would be the end of the meal, or the end of the get-together. So it concludes. So we took leave of each other. Nobody died, no. Well, sometimes when a person takes leave, he doesn't come back, but that's not necessarily, not what we're talking about here. The word in Hebrew, the origin of the word means to bid farewell. To say goodbye. People could say goodbye for the last time, or they could say goodbye till tomorrow. So when this class is over, we'll be nifta from each other. Not dying, hopefully. We're just gonna say goodbye and we'll see each other on Shabbos and Shul, right? So Rashi says, Niftarin min asuda, here we are taking leave of the meal. The Seder is not just about food. This is a big surprise to some people. This itself shocks the people. It's not just about food, no. There's a lot about food, but it's not just about food. It's also about food. But there's a food portion of the Seder that comes to an end. And after the portion of the Seder that comes to an end, called the food part, there's a singing part. After Tzofon comes Hallel, Beirach, we have to do Berchat HaMazon, so that's chanting and singing, and then there's Nirtza, Hallel and Nirtza. We sing Hashem's praises, and we find grace in Hashem's eyes. We climax with the cry of next year in Jerusalem, and in many, many communities, there is a custom to sing all kinds of beautiful ballads and poems and songs until the wee hours of the morning. If you're not singing, then you'll be talking. And the Gemara tells stories about the sages who were discussing Yetzias Mitzrayim all night long at the Seder table. That's how it's supposed to be. But we're talking about leaving the meal, the dinner behind. So that's the meaning of Ein Maftirin, you don't take leave Achar HaPesach, you don't take leave after the Korban Pesach. Pesach is the name of a holiday. Pesach is also the name of a Korban. The first time the word Pesach shows up, it's in reference to an offering, a korban brought in the Beis HaMikdash. So we say, Ein Maftirin, we don't take leave, Achar HaPesach, after the Pesach, we don't take leave of the meal, with an afikoman. The question is, how do we end this? How do we end it? You know, my father told me a story. The first time he spoke publicly, It was a boy, he was like 15 or 16 years old. In those days, he used to walk, even the kids would walk to different shuls and speak words of Hasidus, especially on the Yom Tov. It's called Ta'alucha, something that the Rebbe started in the early 40s. My father's a very good speaker. It's the first time he spoke. He's 15 years old, and he reviewed something, and he walked and he spoke, and then he finished his point, and he said it again, because nobody taught him how to end. How do you end a speech? So he told me, he said it once, he repeated himself a second time. He didn't know what to do. Some people say it sounds like, some people say, I'm still learning this, but anyway. Then he told me, he don't know how to bail, he don't know how to end. So he said, Rabbi say, they didn't teach me how to finish. So I'm finishing. Right? He had to end. The question, what do you end with? That's the question. How do you end? How do you end the meal? How do you end the meal? That's not the meal. That's how you end the singing part. How do you end dinner? Ah, you have dessert. Why do you have dessert? It's nice. You finish the meal, you leave the table with a nice sweet taste in your mouth. And you know, the Gemara says, Ravcha lebesumi milsa. For sweet things, there's always a little room. Isn't dessert part of the dinner? That is an excellent question, which is discussed in the Shulchan Aruch with regard to a second bracha on dessert. Do you make an extra bracha or not? No. That's a good question. It's not simple. It's not simple. The question is if you always have dessert or rarely, almost never have dessert. My father told me that he was at a wedding. My father told me he was at a wedding, and he noticed it was this many, many, many years ago, the famous posik of Halachot, the great posik of the 20th century, post-war Jewish world, that Moshe Feinstein is sitting there, and he's eating dessert. And my father was watching out of the corner of his eye to see if Moshe was going to make a bracha on the dessert or not, because there's a big question about this. Yeah, Moshe notices my father watching, and he says, it's not going to help you to watch what I'm going to do, because I'm from Europe and we have different customs. Because it follows whatever is customary for people. So, at any rate, most people end the meal with dessert. Maybe when you're yourself, maybe not, but if you have a big formal dinner, dessert is served. Comes the Mishnah and says, Ein maftirin, you don't end things achar ha-Pesach, after the Pesach, with an afikoman, with dessert. No, not with dessert. No, not with dessert. Why not? Find out what not. Huh? You're going to get too fat? Tonight you woke up to worry about a diet? Too full? I just told you, the Gemara says, Rav chile besuwa milsa. There's always room for something sweet. Right? So what's going on here? Okay, we don't know. First thing is we know at least what we're talking about. So now we know what. What is the Mishnah? This five-word Mishnah. Ein maftirin. We don't say, goodbye. It was nice having you meal. We don't finish the meal. Achar ha-Pesach, after Pesach, with an afikoman. Now, I know what you're thinking. You think an afikoman is? Tell me the truth. When I say the word afikoman, what do you think of?
Matzah,
exactly. So what's going on over here? You don't finish the meal with matzah? I thought we do finish the meal with matzah. I could hear you saying, good, hold that thought. We're going to get to it. What you and I call afikoman is not what the Gemara refers to right now. And there's a fascinating question of how we end up calling matzah dessert. Because you know, kids look for the afikoman. They look for it because you promise to get them to get something for it. That's what they're looking for. It, not because the afikoman itself is that exciting, right? They would look for chocolate. They wouldn't look for an afikoman. So why do we call it a dessert? The last thing you would call matzah is dessert. Of course they look for it because you promise to give them something for it. So this is what the Gemara is. This is what the Mishnah is saying. Ein maftirin. You don't take leave achar ha-Pesach, after the Korban Pesach, with dessert, with an afikoman. Let's take a look in Rashbam. By the way, this is printed. If you look in the small print.
It's a new book.
Yeah, if you're under 40, you should be able to read it. You look in Rashbam. Otherwise, if reading glasses will help you. Then it says over there, Rashbam says, Masnis in the Mishnah Maftirin. He says almost a verbatim as Rashi. He says, Loshen ha-nifter mechaveri. The language is such that you would use to describe somebody taking leave of his or her friend. Kiloimar. That is to say, kishniftarin min ha-seuda, when you take leave of the meal, ein misayim in oiso bi-afikoman, we don't finish it with an afikoman. Now, I gave you the sneak peek. I told you afikoman means dessert. But here, the Mishnah simply says, ba-afikoman, we don't finish with an afikoman tonight. Of course, we do. But the Mishnah is saying we don't finish with an afikoman. What's an afikoman? Funny you should ask. Rashbam says, Ubi Gemara Mefarish. The Gemara will explain what is an afikoman. Okay, so now we begin to analyze the words of the Mishnah. Have any questions, Doc? Everything's good. Okay. So the Mishnah is now going to come along and analyze this, the words of this Mishnah that tell us how we don't finish dinner. Doesn't tell us how to finish dinner. It tells us how not to finish dinner. Don't finish dinner with an afikoman. A don't.
So what's an afikoman?
Excellent question. What is an afikoman? It's exactly what the Gemara wants to know.
I always thought it was a matzah.
Look at you. You're like a Gemara, a walking Gemara. That's exactly the Gemara's question. The first words of the Gemara is, my afikoman. What is the afikoman? Because if I'm not supposed to finish dinner with it, I have to know what it is first. Because maybe by mistake I'll finish dinner with an afikoman, because I didn't know what an afikoman is. So please tell us, my afikoman, what is an afikoman? Omar Rav. Rav said, well, we'll see. You hang on to your seatbelt there. Omar Rav, Rav said, it means, now I want to tell you something about Rav. Rav is one of the greatest sages of all time. He was the leader of an enormous segment of diaspora Jewry in Bavel, in Babylon. This is where the vast, overwhelming majority of the Jewish people lived at the time. There were some Jews in Bavaria. There was even Jews in England, we believe. There were Jews that were living in the Germanic provinces, certainly Jews living in Spain and in Portugal, but these were all smatterings, small communities. The enormous concentration of Jewish people was Babylon, today known as Iraq. It's not a very Jewish place these days, but it used to be very Jewish. And it was so Jewish that the Talmud that we are reading, we're studying now, was compiled where? In Babylon. One of the great leaders in that first century of Jewish life that flourished in Babylon, this is the post-Mishnah era, one of the great leaders is a man whose name is Rav. Now, his name may not be Rav, actually. There's a dispute if his name is Rav or that was an honorific they gave him. Like somebody in English who say today, well, I don't know what English, in Yiddish, this is the Rav. In English, they say Rabbi. In Yiddish or in Torah language, they say Rav. And the other great leader was Shmuel. It wasn't called Rabbi Shmuel, just called Shmuel, like the prophet. And Rav and Shmuel were in places called Sura and Pumpadisa. These were the two citadels, the two headquarters of Torah study. So our Gemara oftentimes records disputes between Rav, which meant the way they learned the Rav's yeshiva, how Rav taught it, and how Shmuel taught it. And they had divergent traditions. Both are Torah ideas. We have to view the halacha in a particular way. As you'll see, the way we are going to rule the halacha follows the opinion ultimately of Shmuel, not of Rav. Although even Rav is going to get mentioned in the final analysis. So first, Rav's way of teaching this Mishnah. Was Rav understanding the Mishnah? He said, Amar Rav, this is what the Mishnah is trying to tell us. Shelo ya'akru mechabura lechabura. That you shouldn't go from group to group. What does this mean? Shouldn't go from group to group. What does that mean? So, let's take a look in Rashbam, who explains this in great length. I'll read along in the Hebrew, and I will do my best to explain it to you in English. Rav says like this, Achar sha'ochlu ha-Pesach, after the meat of the Korban Pesach is eaten, b'chabura, in a particular group, lo yelchu b'chabura acheret, you shouldn't go to another group, le'echol lopat, not to eat bread, which refers to matzah, obviously, v'lo shum dover, and not anything else. So let me give you some background. One of the interesting halachas about the Korban Pesach is that it has to be eaten in a group. In order for a Korban Pesach to be brought, you need a group. One person can bring a Korban Pesach. There's a beautiful story that's told that after decades of fascinating engineering, it turned out that Erev Pesach was Shabbat. So what's the problem? Well, the problem was nobody knew if you're supposed to bring a Korban Pesach on Shabbat or not. Why didn't they know this? Because they didn't have any books. And everything was reviewed orally. And the great sages of the generation had just passed on. And the Jewish people were somewhat leaderless. Their names were Shemaya and Avtalion. And this was a question that hadn't vexed the Jewish people in decades, if not centuries. In those days, the calendar was dynamic. You'd see a sliver of the moon reappear, go running to the Besdin, you would give your testimony, and they would declare the new moon. This is because the lunar orbit is 29 and a half days, and less than 12 hours. So what happens is that the lunar orbit doesn't have a perfect 30-day cycle. Some months are going to be 29 days. Some months are going to be 30 days. In today's day and age, we have a calendar that's put into place because we don't have the mitzvah of sanctifying the moon anymore. But once upon a time, this was dynamic. So the way our calendar is arranged today, it's genius upon genius. And one of the things that never happens, or there are many things that never happen, many things that are organized in a particular way. One of the things we don't worry about anymore is having Erev Pesach on Shabbat. In fact, we had it last year. Why? Because unfortunately, we're not bringing a Korban Pesach anyway. It wasn't even something they thought about anymore. But here was a situation where they prevented this from happening for many, many years, and nobody knew what to do. The question is this. A public offering is brought on Shabbat. That's called in Hebrew a Korban Tzibur. A private offering is never brought on Shabbat. Shabbat, you're not allowed to kill an animal. You're not allowed to dismember it. You can't do all the things you do. You can't burn something on Shabbat. Only a public offering. And here was the question. How do we view the Korban Pesach? Is it a public offering or is it a private offering? It's not brought on behalf of the nation of Israel. It's brought on behalf of individuals. At that time, there was a dark horse, a man named Hillel. Nobody knew who he was. He was a brilliant Torah scholar, but very humble. He was 40 years old. He came from Babylon. He emigrated to Israel. He didn't speak the language. He didn't serve in the IDF. He was a nobody in the society. You know, it was like a nobody. He was invisible. And nobody appreciated him. And he was so poor, he didn't have money. He had to pay a tax to come into the yeshiva to learn. He didn't have any money. He used to, at night, go up to the skylight and a whole night like this, listening to the Torah study. Many amazing stories about Hillel. The bottom line is, Hillel got up and he said, it's obvious. He said, on one hand, it's a Korban Yochid. Because if you're not included in the Korban Pesach can't be brought. However, he said, if one person brings a Korban Pesach, you can't bring the Korban either. You have to have many people. And he said, if you won't bring a Korban Pesach today, then when will you bring it? And this is the meaning of the Mishnah. Imein ani li, if I'm not part of the Korban, mili, then who will be part of a Korban for me? Uchshani la'atzmi, if I'm alone, can I bring a Korban by myself? No. Vimlo achshav, and if I don't bring it now, Erev Pesach, ematai, when will I bring the Korban Pesach? And that's when Hillel became the great Torah leader. He rose on the wings of the Korban Pesach. And his family later had the nesiyut, the dynastic leadership of the Jewish people that was almost like monarchy. Man Malki, there was Novogenwood, they saw there wouldn't be another monarchy anymore. David HaMelech's descendants would not rise till Mashiach would come. They said, okay, Hillel is maternally descended from David HaMelech. He will be our regent. He will be our monarch. He didn't have a scepter. He didn't have an army. He didn't have a legislative body. All he had was the power of his spiritual charisma and his authority by virtue of his Torah. And the vast majority of the Jewish people followed every word he said, not because he could enforce it, but because he was a Rebbe. So he was like our king. And so it was. That's where the phrase gets coined, Rabban. Rabban is Rebbe and Nasi. Nasi is like a president, like a quasi-political leader, but he wasn't political. Okay. So here's how it goes. The Korban Pesach needs a group. Everything I said was incidental. I'm just introducing this. It needs a group. And we know that the first Korban Pesach had to be eaten in a house. You couldn't leave the house because there was a big bad angel sweeping the streets outside. You could get finished, you know, if you weren't in your house. So when we have a Korban Pesach, as the Gemara told us several pages back, we have to make sure we're eating bechabura. And that means like this. You have an area that's designated, say this room. Say we'd have a large family, a nuclear family, or maybe a number of small families that got together and say, we will have the Seder together in unison. Incidentally, this is still the case till today. They have public Seders, or a few families get together. This is from the days of the Beis HaMikdash like this. And once you start eating the Korban Pesach, you're not allowed to leave. You got to eat the Korban Pesach in your area. And it actually was like demarcation. And it's a violation of Torah to take the Korban Pesach outside of this area. It's got to be in that area of scrimmage. And everybody eats in his chabura. What happens if you take a Korban Pesach and you keep munching and you walk across the hall to the next group? You did an avera. You did a sin. You know how to do that. So the Gemara tells us, Rav understood this, ein maftirin means, achara pesach, you can't take leave of the meal. Afikoman means, my afikoman, he means, afikoman means not a food you eat, but afikoman means a behavior. Shalayakru mechaburu lechaburu, you shouldn't go from one group to the next. Going back to Rashbam, acha sha'ochlo ha'pesach b'chabura, after you eat the Korban Pesach in a group together, lo yelchu b'chabura acheres l'hachil le'pasvel l'shum dover, don't go, eat anything else. But why can't you eat anything else? You're not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach somewhere else. I could eat something else. I could have some Italian ices. You know, it's nice, something sweet, something cool. What's wrong with that? The answer is, you're right, in theory you could. However, our rabbi said, don't. Because if you walk to another room, another home, another building, another area, and you're going to have ices, the next thing you'll know, you'll be eating steak. Because you get used to the idea, you could eat something somewhere else. Dilma, osi lemecha lesa pesach b'shnei mekoymes. Maybe you'll eat the Korban Pesach in two places. Because if you think, I can eat here and I can eat there, so One year or one day, it'll be whatever it might be. And the next day, it'll be the Korban Pesach. And that's a big sin. You're not allowed to do that. And because it's a big sin, we have all kinds of extra decrees, things which are put in place to make sure we never make that mistake. Lots of people laugh at all these things. Say, I have to make this fence and that fence, as if something's going to happen. But they're very careful with every single restriction from COVID. 67 restrictions away, 67 steps of what might happen, they're very careful. And I'm not saying you can't be very careful. But don't laugh at people who are careful about Torah and mitzvahs. Because for us, eating a Korban Pesach in two places is as bad as getting a spiritual case of COVID. It's nishgut. You could expiate spiritually. It'd be a terrible thing for you. Va'anan, he says, stoma. Reb Yehuda, b'keitzad tzeil. So there's actually a machlekes between Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon about this. And Rashbam says, we follow the Stam Mishnah, the Mishnah without the specific name attached to it, and that's the opinion of Reb Yehuda. And we believe that the Pesach is not allowed to be eaten in two chaburas. Ve'ein ha'oichal oichal ha'pesach b'shnei mekoymeis. The Pesach can be divided into groups, pardon me, but cannot be eaten in two groups, which means, suppose we have two very large groups and they speak different languages and have a different syntax and we had to fuse them together because an animal, you know, a lot of people to eat an animal. An ounce of meat. You get a lot of ounces out of that little sheep or goat. So we said, you know what? The Portuguese part of the family is going to go to that side and they'll tell the story in Portuguese. And the French side of the family will go to the other side. And they divided the Korban Pesach. Each one took their portion of meat and that's it. That you could do. But once you make the division and you start the Seder, you're going to eat the Korban Pesach? No, then you can't mix. That's over. So you can divide a Korban Pesach. You cannot mix going from one group to the next group. And there's a lot to say about it, but this is not the place for it. This is a fascinating halacha. It doesn't apply today. Today you can go from one Seder to the next. That's not the issue. But what does apply in the time of the Beis HaMikdash was that the Korban Pesach couldn't be eaten in two places. All right, where are we? V'hach milsa derav ukmeosom b'shas achila. This is a question, an issue, a concern at the time of dinner, at the time when food's being eaten, because food and food can easily be mixed up and confused. Avla achar achila, once dinner is over, the kitchen is closed. No more food is being served. So what are we still doing at the table? Oh, now we're singing. He says, "La'achar achila, yochol la'akar." You want to sing with the Portuguese Jews? You think they sing nicer? No problem. You go to the Portuguese side. So you can move out of your group once dinner's done. But you can't move out of your group until dinner is done. Because if you move out of your group before dinner is done, and you eat something somewhere else, next thing we know, you're eating a Korban Pesach somewhere else. Make sense? It's logical. You can go leimer halala with the chabur acheres, leikopid el alechal. The issue is eating bebeis mekaymis. We have a question here from Skippy's YouTube. Are you allowed to add extra flavor to the korban, or is it eaten after it's cooked with no extra spices? It's an excellent question, Skippy. So first of all, let me tell you a little secret. Like pepper, you can't cook a korban pesach. You can only roast it. But yes, you can season it. You can season the Korban Pesach, but you can only roast it, and it has to be fire roasted. And because of that, you can't even use a metal spit. You have to use a special kind of dry wood, so that if it's wet wood, maybe the juices of the wood might heat up, and that will be like a form of cooking. So they used a special pomegranate branch, which was dry, which enabled the meat to be roasted on fire. And this itself is a fascinating issue as to why Hashem wanted it that way and why it is the way, but let's not get into a divergence. All right? So Skippy, don't you worry. When Mashiach comes, you can have your pepper. All right. So the point here is eating. Eating. That's the issue. And therefore, according to Rav, how do we read this Mishnah? The main thing is, Ein maftirin achar Pesach. You don't, so to speak, take leave after the Pesach with Afikoman. What then is Afikoman? Rashbam now continues to explain. And he says, you shouldn't think it means that you can't eat the Afikoman in two places, the Korban Pesach in two places. That would be self-understood. That already says elsewhere. We don't need a Mishnah here to repeat the same thing. Mishnah tells us you can't eat the Korban Pesach in two places. Our Mishnah tells us that you can't eat anything in two places. On the night of Pesach, dinner is served, and stay right where you are. Ever happened to you? Your mother made you stay at the table because you didn't finish your dinner? No? Happened to me. I don't like my dinner. I want the dessert. So you don't get dessert till you finish your dinner. Oy vey, I was sitting at that table forever. I didn't like chicken. Anyway, so dinner, you can't go away for dinner. Now, what is the meaning of afikoman? Because it's funny. The Gemara asked, "My afikoman?" And what is the Gemara's answer? Amar Rav, Rav says, "Shelo yakru." You shouldn't go mechabura lechabura. He didn't answer the question. The question is, what is an afikoman? He didn't answer the question. He told us the halacha. He explained the Mishnah. So Rashbam explains, Ula Rav Hochi Mashmalei, Afikoman is a conjunctive word. We have a lot of conjunctive words in Torah literature. Like Shalashuddis, people who speak Yiddish, they say Shalashuddis. What is Shalashuddis? What is it? Shalosh Seudot. Say it fast 10 times. It's Shalashuddis. Right? So in Hebrew they say Seudash Lishit. That's a little harder to mix up. That sounds... But in Yiddish, shalashuddis, it's a conjunctive word. There are many words like this. So afikoman is a conjunctive word of afiku minaichu. What does afiku minaichu mean? It means let's go or take our vessels from here, our kelim. How does the article render it in English? He says afiku minaichu is take your utensils from here so we can go and eat somewhere else. It's like take your fork with you. Afiku minaichu. Take your stuff. No, you're not allowed. That's the point. Can't do that. Don't take your eating utensils to the next place. You know, sometimes that you go to these, they tell you take your fork off, take your plate away, and they're going to bring you a new plate, and they put your fork on the side. Or as you're going from place to place, you know, you take your chopsticks along, you know. So afiku minaichu means don't take those with you. Don't take your knife and fork. Don't take the things you use to eat because you can't use them anymore. You can only use them here. Keep your instruments here. Don't leave with your instruments. So that means afiku minaichu. Afiku minaichu means, again, in English the way he puts it, afiku, take out, and minaichu is the things to eat from here. Afiku minaichu. In the Rashbam's words, he says, hoitziu keilecha mikan. A person might say, let's take our fork and knife, velech velnechel b'makam acher, and then we can go eat somewhere else. We wouldn't know. Today we have enough forks and knives, and everything's plastic anyway. But once upon a time, people took their fork and knife. That was your thing. That's what you had to eat with. So when people would move to another place for dinner, they could get food somewhere else. They couldn't get a plate somewhere else. What would they go with? The plate. You know, sometimes like you go to those buffet dinners. You can eat all you want, but you got to bring your plate back. They don't give you a new plate. Don't leave the table without your plate. When you go to the buffet, you can't do anything. So he says, the Mishnah then reads, Ein maftirin, don't take leave achar Pesach with your utensils. You want to go to the other place? You think it's more exciting over there? You think he has a better voice than the guy who's leading your Seder? No problem. Leave your fork and knife on the table. That means afikoman. This is the opinion of Rav. So Rav comes along and says, so they store, Skippy is asking a question, they store the instruments, spoons and fork in the Beis HaMikdash and come back next Yom Tov for them. Not exactly, Skippy. It goes like this. You're not allowed to eat in the Beis HaMikdash unless you're a Kohen and eating something called a Korban Chatas or an Oshem, which is special Kodshe Kodoshim, the most severe level of offering. However, you take your Korban out of the Beis HaMikdash, but you must stay in the precinct of the city of Yerushalayim. And there, wherever you are, you have your tent or your home or your area, and you mark it off like a scrimmage, and your fork and knife stays there. Don't leave with your fork and knife. You can leave, not with your fork and knife. Because if you leave with your fork and knife, what might you do? You might eat. And that could be a very dangerous thing. Because once you eat, you end up eating a Korban Pesach. So no utensils. Leave your plate. You can go back to the buffet, but you can't take your plate. What am I going to do then? Exactly. You can sing at the buffet. You can't eat at the buffet. You got it? That's the first approach to this Mishnah. Now, I have to tell you that Rashbam later on, as well as the Rif, says very clear that we follow not the first, but the second approach, the interpretation of Shmuel, not Rav. Now, the truth is, what Rav says is correct. It's correct. It's true. You can't eat the Korban Pesach in two places. But the Mishnah is saying something else. And we will focus on the second or additional interpretation. I don't mean additional as added on to, but the other interpretation, both of which are true, because the Mishnah contains all these ideas, that will be the primary focus of what we're going to learn. What's the second halacha contained? What did Shmuel focus on? V'Shmuel Amar, Shmuel said, the primary thrust and the message of this Mishnah is, Kigoin It refers to, and here it uses a funny word, which we don't have in our lexicon today. The word is Oir Diloe. What's an Oir Diloe? Rashi tells us Oir Diloe. He says it's Kmeinu Pitrius. These are two kinds of mushrooms. Mushrooms that grow from the ground and mushrooms that grow sometimes on a tree. I don't know the difference in English. But I know there's a lot of mushrooms in the store. Maybe one's a portobello, maybe one is something else, the mushrooms. So he used to like, he said, I like the mushrooms. That was his dessert. He liked munching on mushrooms. Maybe they were roasted, I don't know, fried. He liked mushrooms. He says, I like mushrooms for dessert. Ice cream wasn't popular in Iraq. But my friend, he said, the goizelayo la abba, little Cornish hens. That's what Abba likes. Who's Abba? So Rashbam tells us, Abba, kach shmoy shel Rav. That was Rav's name. Rav's name was Reb Abba. But instead of calling him Reb Abba, they called him Rav. Rabbi, that's what they call him, Rav. It's an honorific. So he said this, you know, it's like the Polish Jews and the Lithuanian Jews have an ongoing war about gefilte fish. The Litvische Yidden do not put sugar in the gefilte fish. It's a venial sin, right? It's very bad if you put sugar in the But the Polish Yidden would never eat gefilte fish without sugar. And then sometimes you had an intermarriage between a Litvische family and a Polish family, and it was terrible. Because what are you going to do about the gefilte fish? Different conventions. You know, like the Hungarians make very soupy cholent. And the Ukrainians or Russian Jews used to make very dry cholent. My mother grew up with a mother who was from Budapest. She made a soupy cholent. My father didn't like it, so my mother learned from my grandmother how to make a dry cholent. I grew up in a house, my mother's making the dry cholent. We go to visit my Babi Zedi, I'm like, Mommy, what is this? What is Babi serving me? This is soup, this is not cholent. You know, Babi says, it's very good for you, eat it, it's cholent. I said, Babi, this is not cholent, this is soup. So different Jews, different conventions. There was a... Living in Iraq and Babel, they had different conventions. One ate mushrooms for dessert and the other was eating Cornish hens. I don't eat either for dessert. We eat Italian ices, I don't know. But this doesn't matter actually what it is. Soon we're going to hear of a dessert that's a little closer, a little bit closer to what we're used to. So he says, in other words, Rav said, Afikoman is not a thing. It's a behavior. The behavior, leave your things on the table. That's afikoman. Don't take your things. Afikoman is take the knife and fork back to the buffet. He said, don't do that. Not after the Korban Pesach. Once the Korban Pesach comes along, don't you dare touch your utensils. Don't say afikoman, I'm taking them to get more. Shmuel says, afikoman? I'll tell you what afikoman is. Afikoman is dessert. But apparently the word dessert wasn't popular yet. So he described it. And he knew that not everybody's eating the same dessert. In one part of Babylon, they were doing mushroom dessert. And the other, they were doing like soft Cornish hens or something. Little chicks. Different kind of dessert. It was light, fluffy food, you know. They like to finish off that way. In Hebrew, dessert is called kinuach hasuda. Kinuach hasuda means to kind of to wash down the meal. So the Gemara says, Shmuel says, for me it would be or delayo li, or goizalayo la abba for Rav. Now not everybody agrees that Abba is Rav. In fact, according to Rashi's commentary on Masechet Brachot, it explains that Abba is not the name of Rav. But Shmuel used to call him this honorific. He used to call him father. You know, like in a different faith system, they call somebody Papa or whatever. He's like, to call him, you know, the famous Sephardic holy man of the 20th century was a man whose name was Baba Sali. And what does Baba Sali mean? It means praying father. He was a big Rav, he was a big God, and he knew enormous amount of Torah. But he was famous not for his teachings and not for his halachic rulings. He was famous for his blessings, for his miracles, and for his prayers. So they called him the praying father. So according to Rashi, who says that his name was not Abba, maybe Isi, they say his name was. But he said he would call him Abba. And you know why this is fascinating? Because here you had the two divergent schools of Torah. They were at loggerheads, and they were arguing about just anything, or just about anything. They had different approaches to every area of Torah. And yet, when Shmuel speaks about his halachic protagonist, how does he speak about him? He calls him Abba, father. Calls him an honorific. Or he calls him by his first name, a friendship, first name. At any rate, this is the story of Afikoman. According to Rav, Afikoman is a description of dessert. So what does the word Afikoman mean then? That's a good question. Let's take a look in Rashbam. So Rashbam says, well, look in Rashi first because it's shorter. He says, Goizolayo la'aba l'rav. Who's Abba Rav? Shahaya rogil lechel goizolim. He used to eat little chicks. La'achasu dasi. And here Rashi tells us, so how is it an afikoman? The loshon afikoman means hoitziu veheviu mine masika, bring out the sweets, bring out the good stuff. Afiku means bring out. So in Shmuel's view, afiku, Rav's view, afiku was take out the knives and forks, take out the gear. In Shmuel's view, it's not the gear, it's the stuff, it's the merchandise. They would say, bring out the chocolate, bring out the ice cream, come on, bring out the good stuff now. You know, like little kids, what are they waiting for? They're waiting for dessert. That's all they want. Little boy said to his father, when is the meal starting? Father said, in 5 minutes. And the boy said, and when is dessert starting? He said, in an hour. When would you like to come? He said, I'll be there in an hour. So afikoman means bring out the good things. You know, my Zaydi used to, Friday night he had a thing. He would call it the Tzveita Tish. That was his shtick. My Zaydi Hecht used to have a thing on Friday night. We were there. After the meal was over, the Tzveita Tish came out. The second table. What was the second table? That was before second cup. I bet you they stole it from him, that name. What was it? What does it mean? The second table? The good stuff. And then all the goodies and the sweets would come out. We were kids. We used to look forward not to the first tish. We looked forward to the second tish. Bring out the good stuff. So that means afikoman. Man is an acronym for or a conjunction of mine mitika, sweet things. Sweet things. You know, it's like Hamantaschen. This notion that it's called Haman's pockets or Haman's ears or Haman's hat is baloney. I'm sorry to demolish this myth that you, yeah, they're trying a lot. It never happened. How do we know what hat Haman wore? You know what shoes he wore? Maybe he gets stuck on his hat. You have to eat his hat? I don't know. We know because we know because the Megillah tells us, but it doesn't tell us what his hat looked like. Where does such a thing come from? So actually, the real tradition is montashen. Mon is poppy seeds. Poppy seeds are not so sweet, but you know you can make them sweet. You can make them, and our bubbies know how to make good hamantashen, good montashen. But little kids thought hamon became a thing. It became a thing of hamantashen. But they thought, oh, montashen, this must be what it is. So the mon is talking about the sweet stuff. And then from sweetened poppy seeds, all of a sudden it became prunes and it became jam and all kinds of other things. Every year today they invent a new kind of hamantashen. So they have sushi hamantashen already. All kinds of what can you put inside the dough, right? So that's the good stuff. Afikoman means then bring out the sweet stuff. And that's what they used to call dinner or dessert. That's what it was called. Dessert was called the good stuff. Bring it out. How would you read the Mishnah then? Ein maftir, and you don't take leave. Achara Pesach, don't take leave of the meal after the Korban Pesach with what? With an afikoman, with bring out the good stuff, with dessert. So don't eat after the afikoman, after the Pesach, pardon me, I keep getting mixed up, but we call it afikoman today, we'll talk about that soon. Don't eat after the Korban Pesach. Now the Gemara will introduce us to a dessert that's a little more familiar. Back in Israel, they ate normal desserts. Rabbi Yochanan was living in Israel when Rav and Shmuel were living in Bavel, or a little before. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, kigoin tamarim. Tamarim are figs. Kloyos are nuts. Kloyos are like roasted grain, what we call in English today, granola. You know, honey-sweetened granola. And egoism and nuts. And maybe they were glazed with something sweet too. This is the kind of dessert we're familiar with. That's this we know. Even today, a lot of desserts are actually nuts. But they're glazed with something. They put something on top of it. They tell the story. I'm not going to believe it. Whatever. It's too ridiculous. So anyway, the point is, this is like recognizable dessert already. You know, the sweetened granola, the nuts, or the sweet fruit, the dried fruit. The Gemara now says, Tanya Kava Seyde Rabbi Yochanan. We learn something which sounds very much along the lines of what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan said, Ein maftiren achar ha-pesach, don't take leave of the meal after the Korban Pesach. What does that mean? Don't take leave of it. Kegoin, that means, for example, kegoin, tomorim kloyes vegoizim, like figs, nice, succulent, dried figs, sweet figs, kloyes, these roasted grain that becomes sweetened, and egoizim and nuts. So there you have it. You don't take leave of the meal eating something else. Now comes the big question. It's hot, cold. So the big question now is, does this apply only to the Korban Pesach? Or does it apply to the matzah that we eat at the end of the Seder meal? It's a very interesting question. And the Gemara is going to discuss precisely this question now. Is this applicable only in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, or does this Mishnah have a message for exilic Jews too? Now, according to the opinion of Rav, it's self-understood that this Mishnah is talking about the Beis HaMikdash, because it's about eating a Korban Pesach. So that's not a question. The question is, according to Shmuel, is the Mishnah talking only about the Korban Pesach, or is the Mishnah actually talking about the matzah that we eat at the end of the Seder as well, which, by the way, we call afikoman. Why do we call it afikoman? It's a funny thing. We eat the afikoman at the end of the Seder. Everybody knows that. The Mishnah says, don't eat the afikoman. Don't have an afikoman after the Seder, after the Pesach. And what do? We have an afikoman. We do have an afikoman. No, the adults too. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Sam, you got to come here to the public Seder. You got to... Listen, parents came up with creative ways to keep kids awake because it's a mitzvah to tell the children the story of the Exodus. So they sent them looking for the afikoman because they had to keep them awake. And, you know, sometimes it gets a little boring. So this way, and actually you were supposed to eat the afikoman. See, I'm glad you came tonight. So here's something very interesting. In the Levush, which is the codes that were written after the Torah. This is like the Shulchan Aruch, but it's not the Shulchan Aruch. It's a codification of halacha that follows the system the same system that the Shulchan Aruch employed, which is the system created by Rabbi Yaakov Balaturim. In Simin Tof Ayin Ches, which is chapter 478 of Eirach Chaim, the Levush doesn't call it Eirach Chaim, he calls it Levush Achur. So he says like this. He says, first of all, he offers us a new interpretation of the word maftirin, different than Rashi and Rashbam. Rashi and Rashbam interpreted maftirin as taking leave, like niftar. He says, maftirin means psichas pe ledibur, opening your mouth to speak. And where do you see that in the scripture? He says, in the 22nd Psalm, it says, Yaftiru b'safa, they open their mouths. Yaftiru. So the word Yaftiru means to open. And it's brought in elsewhere that this is similar to the expression of Peter Rechem, the child who opens the mother's womb, the firstborn child, who opens the birthing canal for the first time, is a firstborn because he's Peter, because he opens. So it means to open. Then he says, the Torah Levush says, another way is nifter mechaveray, like taking leave of a friend. So you're leaving the meal. And he says, the point is this. We don't, so to speak, open ourselves or take leave of something else after the Korban Pesach. I mean, don't open your mouth. Ein maftirin, don't open your mouth. Not to speak, to eat. I mean, don't eat anything. That's what it means. Or don't take leave of the meal after the Pesach. Nothing else. And he says, what is afikoman? He says, afikoman is a conjunction of afikumini. Bring out the goods. And this would be the meaning of the Mishnah, the way the Levush reads the Mishnah. Ein poschim pihem. We don't open our mouths achar achilo, after eating, as if to say, afikulanu mina mesika, bring us the sweet stuff now. Open your mouth. Come on, bring me the good stuff. Say, mom, close your mouth. Don't open your mouth to say that. Don't open your mouth to eat. Don't say, I want to have the dessert. Now, of course, the big question is, why are we calling the matzah, which we eat at the end of the Seder, why are we calling that an afikoman? Especially because in the language of the Alter Rebbe, in Simen Tov Ayin Zayin of Eirach Chaim, the Alter Rebbe says in chapter 477, subsection 3, he says, Tzorech lechel kezay yizeh, you have to eat this last ounce of matzah. La'achar gemar kol asudu, and you finish the whole meal, k'moy ha-pesach, like the Korban Pesach. V'lo yechel achar of shum meichel, don't eat anything afterwards. I'm giving you the sneak preview, because really this is, the Gemara didn't talk about this yet. Now the Rebbe says, Kizayit Zeh, this ounce of matzah that we eat at the end, Nikra is called Afikoman. It's called an Afikoman. Why is it called Afikoman? The Rebbe doesn't say. So the Levush offers a fascinating insight. The Levush says like this. He says, Onu korim ha-matzah Afikoman, al shem, by virtue or in name, as if b'mokem aperis, it's in the place of dessert. Derech lechal achar asud b'pam acher, usually when the meal ends, dessert is served. Here, what do you serve? Matzah. You gotta be kidding. This is dessert? Tonight it's dessert. In the place of dessert. Well, why would you call it dessert? Levush says an incredible thing. Va'agav chavivut the mitzvah, because we cherish a mitzvah. Shehu chaviva aleinu, it is cherished upon us. Kipedes mesukim, just like everybody loves dessert. Everybody loves the sweet stuff. Everybody loves a mitzvah. Well, they're supposed to, at least. You're supposed to cherish the mitzvah. It's to be dear to you. You're supposed to say to your children, Afikulanu mini mesika, bring the good stuff. On the night of Pesach, what's the good stuff? On the night of Pesach, it's matzah. It's like the sweet stuff. Ahu ha matzah, shemesuka aleinu, mitzvasa, its mitzvah is sweet to us. Nobody in his or her right mind thinks that matzah is sweet, but it's like sweet. We cherish the ability to eat matzah. Rachmana litzlan, when a yid sits at a table of a seder, it doesn't have matzah, it's a very bitter night. Huh? I'm sorry, you're from England, you don't like yid. When a Jew sits at a table, Rachmana litzlan, and wouldn't have matzah, it would be a terrible night. And if it has matzah, it would be the sweetest thing in the world. Ah, that's the point. So we call matzah afikomen, which is kind of oxymoronic, because the Mishnah comes along and says, so don't eat an afikomen. So what do? We eat afikomen. It's the exact opposite. But because that was the verbiage. So that's what we got called. Anyway, so I gave you a little sneak preview, but the Gemara now deals with exactly this question. Does the same thing apply to the matzah as well? Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said that Shmuel said, not only do we read the Mishnah in Maftirin Achar HaPesach, after the Korban Pesach, but furthermore, Ein Maftirin Achar Matzah Afikoman. We don't have dessert after matzah. After the matzah of Afikoman. Why not? Why don't we have dessert after the matzah Afikoman? Here it gets very, very interesting. There's a whole discussion here. The question is it only a halacha that applies to the concept of Korban Pesach? Or is it a concept that applies to whatever is eaten at the end as a mitzvah? So the Tosfos on the next page says that you have to know that the reason that we don't eat anything after the Korban Pesach is because the Korban Pesach has to be nechal al hasoiva. You have to eat it when you're in a state of satiation. Why? So we're going to have an interesting discussion in Tosfos, because when it comes to eating kodshim, eating things which are Beis HaMikdash oriented, we're not supposed to eat it ravenously, hungry, where anything tastes good. You're supposed to eat it like a royal, like greatness, slowly. You enjoy it. You're not eating because you have to, you're eating because you want to. There's a big difference. A poor person eats because he's starving, he has to. The rich person eats because he wants to. So, therefore, we shouldn't eat the Korban Pesach, but that doesn't apply to matzah. What does that have to do with matzah? Another reason that's brought down in the Yerushalmi is that you're not allowed to break the bones of the Korban Pesach. But if you're very hungry, you start to chew on the bones, try to get some marrow. You're very hungry. You might come to break the bones. But if you're not very hungry, you're not gonna do anything you shouldn't do. You'll nibble gently. Because of this, we want you to have eaten your fill. No eating later on. You finished eating everything, now you can have some, what we call Korban Pesach. This doesn't apply to matzah. So the Tosfos says that the reason is we're seeking to have an aftertaste of a mitzvah that remains with us. Tosfos is found on the next page in Daf Kuf Chof. He says, Sfira leket elasavar de beinan sheyehei tam matzah upesach befiv. What should remain in your mouth? What should you savor? What should linger on? The taste of matzah. Ideally, the taste of Korban Pesach. If it can't be the taste of Korban Pesach, at least it'll be the taste of matzah. Taste of a mitzvah. The Rambam says something very similar. The Rambam describes the Seder dinner in the 8th chapter of Hilchos Chametz Umatzah. In Halacha Tes, he says, Nimshach b'seuda, you eat, v'eichel kol mashu reitzelechel, eat and drink. Knock yourself out, as they say. Whatever you want. U'ba'acharoino. And at the end, then you eat the meat of the Korban Pesach. Even just an ounce. V'eini toyom acharov klal. You're not allowed to taste anything afterwards. The Rambam doesn't say you're not allowed to eat. He says you're not allowed to taste. The Rambam focuses on taste. And later on, it's even clearer. Ubizman hazeh, and in today's day and age, where we unfortunately, so far at least, haven't had the Korban Pesach, oichol kezayis matzah, you eat an ounce of matzah, the einoi toyem achareha klum, we don't taste anything afterwards. He wouldn't, if you asked the Rambam, he would say, don't take a Listerine strip. Don't taste anything afterwards. What's the taste in your mouth? Matzah. Which now would make sense. It would have been a Korban Pesach, which is the climax of the holiest food that a Jew can eat once a year, is the Korban Pesach. In today's day and age, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have Korbanot. What's the holiest thing a person can eat today? Matzah. So you want that taste to linger on? So this is clearly, this is the Rambam's opinion, this is the Tosfos opinion, but the Alter Rebbe says a very interesting thing. In the same Halacha Gimel, the Alter Rebbe says that this matzah that's eaten afterwards, at the end of the Seder, he says, don't eat anything after. He doesn't say don't taste anything. He says don't eat anything like after a Pesach. The Alter Rebbe seems to focus not on the taste, but rather the idea that if a Korban Pesach should be treated a certain way, if this is going to be in lieu of the Korban Pesach, you have to treat it the same way you treat the Korban Pesach. So the Alter Rebbe says, lo yoichal, you don't eat. You don't eat. K'moy achar ha-Pesach. And this kezayis is called an afikoman. So the point then is, we could look at this and say, you don't eat after the Korban Pesach because you want to taste the mitzvah in your mouth, like Tosfos is saying, or Rambam is saying. Or the first opinion of Tosfos is because the Korban Pesach, he says, can't be eaten. Now the Gemara itself is going to have a dispute here, whether this does apply to matzah or doesn't apply to matzah. And some would argue that the dispute is precisely that. Is it about the Korban Pesach or is it about the taste of a mitzvah? This is the issue. But the Alter Rebbe seems to say, seems to believe that the reason that we shouldn't eat anything after the matzah is because the matzah should be treated like a Korban Pesach. So therefore, the last thing we eat, the thing we stay with, is whatever we would have stayed with in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. If this is in lieu of the Korban Pesach, then you don't eat afterwards. And it's interesting because, you know, I was thinking that this idea of a lingering taste, a taste that stays on, it's almost like the it's a mitzvah to taste the matzah. It's a mitzvah to experience all the different elements of the story, of the narrative on the night of Pesach through taste, through smell, through touch, through song. You know, there's a guy named Howard Gardner. He wrote something called The Seven Keys. He came up with this idea that early childhood has to impart lessons in seven keys. Every lesson has to be taught in seven different ways. He says, because some children learn through music, and some children learn through drama, and some children, they learn through stories, and some children learn through they learn like your regular learning, the different ways. So he says you have to, his curriculum is about seven keys. So my wife was running the school, she created an eighth key. She said there's always a spiritual key. It has to be a Yiddishkeit. The lesson has to be taught in Yiddishkeit form also. So teach the lesson in song and this and that, and a mitzvah, and connect it to a mitzvah always. That was the way she created the curriculum. Anyway, the bottom line I'm trying to make is this. Howard Gardner's idea is a very good idea. It's possible that it doesn't only apply for little children. It's possible that it wouldn't be a bad idea if we did it for adults too, but for sure for children it applies. Because when we get older, we learn how to learn. We learn how to, you know, you have no choice, you got to learn. So the Howard Gardner is not the originator of this idea. Who originates this idea? The Chachamim, the sages. The sages, they created a multimedia experience. You taste bitter herbs, you feel the dry matzah, you taste the sweet wine, the children touch things, they see things, they sing songs, in many houses they role play. The Galiciana Yidden from southern Poland and the Jews who live in Yemen, in Sana'a, in Yemen, have the same custom. Don't ask me how it ends up being Galatian in Yemen. What's the custom? That the leader of the Seder puts a little matzah on his back, and he goes out of the house and he knocks on the door. And the children say, who's there? It's like, knock, knock. Who's there? And he says, Ayid, a Jew. Where is a Jew coming from? He said, a Jew is coming from Mitzrayim. And then whoever's leading the Seder walks in and he role plays like that. I know because my mother told me that's what her father used to do. That was the Galatian minig. That was what he did. And then I read later, I got hold of it. That was the custom in Sana'a, in Yemen. I'm like, wow, like from Galicia to Yemen. But it's a custom. So you see that the sages wanted everything to be played out in a variety of ways. Why? Because it's so important to impart the lesson. And here it seems that not only is it important to impart the lesson in multimedia ways, but you leave the Seder table, you still have the taste of a mitzvah. Now, it could be this is a very technical thing. It's not about the taste, it's about the technicality of a korban. And at least when we're eating a korban, afikoman matzah, because we're eating it in the image of the original korban Pesach, so therefore we're going to continue to treat it in the same fashion. And when Mashiach will come, we'll know what to do with a korban Pesach, because we've been practicing with matzah. Anyway, so that's the Tosfos. On the next page, the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, it seems that the same applies to matzah. Freg the Gemara asks, Tanan, we learned in a Mishnah, this is our little Mishnah, Ein maftirin achara Pesach afikoyman. The Mishnah says you don't eat after the Pesach, the korban. Says the Gemara, achara Pesach, hu delay achal, after meat you don't eat. I mean, korban Pesach meat. But lachar matzah, maftirin. You can bid the meal farewell or open your mouth and say, bring it the good stuff. You can do that. Because the Mishnah says only Korban Pesach. And the Mishnah was redacted long after the Beis HaMikdash was already destroyed. So the Gemara says that's not a proof. Because the Mishnah could be understood in saying, Loi mi boi. Loi mi boi means it goes without saying. You don't even have to say. Loi mi boi ka'amai. The Mishnah is saying you don't have to say. Loi mi boi achar matzah. The loi nofish tamayu. Not only after the matzah, whose taste is not very pungent or strong. The taste of matzah fades very quickly. Avala'achar ha'pesach. The nofish tamayu, that it has a very profound and strong taste. It's one of the reasons you wait 6 hours after eating meat, because the taste of meat stays in your mouth. It's like oily. You still taste the steak 3 hours later, maybe 6 hours later, up to 6 hours. So we would say, so you drink a little water, it's not like you don't taste the steak anymore. The matzah you forgot about. A good glass of wine, the matzah is gone. But the steak, you're not going to wash it down with that. And that's exactly what the Mishnah says. Not only after a matzah you can't eat, even after a Korban Pesach you don't eat. You would think lachar Pesach, the nofish tamayo, after Korban Pesach that has such a powerful taste, le matzi over that it cannot take the taste away, and as such it can't take the taste away. So why would it be a problem? Less lamba, we shouldn't have to worry about it. Kamash malon, the Mishnah is teaching us not that you can eat after the matzah, but you can't eat after the Korban Pesach. Even after the Korban Pesach, you can't eat anything. Even after the Korban Pesach. The matzah, for sure you can't. Why? You don't want to lose the taste. You don't want to lose the taste. Matzah tastes good with jam. Not on Pesach night. No, because we don't want to take away the taste of the matzah. Huh? You can have matzah with jam at a different time, but not on the night of the Seder.
You said I can't have it at all.
I said you can't have it.
Pesach?
I said you can't have jam on your matzah on Pesach.
No, you said I can't have matzah.
You can't have matzah, you can have matzah. The only time you can't have matzah is between Purim and Pesach.
So I've been eating matzah all this time after what you told me. You said I can't have matzah on Pesach.
Sam, what did I tell you?
You said the only time you can have matzah No, a Pesach.
I said to you, you can't eat matzah until it gets dark. That's what I told you. I said, don't eat matzah before until it gets dark at night.
So I can't eat matzah.
Not now, you can't. This is the time of the year we don't eat matzah.
I'm still confused.
Don't be confused. On the night of Pesach, you make sure you eat a kazayas, an ounce of matzah, after it's dark.
I can eat during the day?
Yeah, on Pesach, no problem.
No, not on Pesach.
Today?
Any day.
Not this month. Any day but this month. 11 months a year you can eat matzah.
Not
between Purim and Pesach. That's our custom, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Gemara now says, Misayale, I'll bring a proof to him. Now we're going to bring a proof to the words of Shmuel that the idea of not eating after does not only apply to the Pesach, but also to the matzah. And this is because like this. On the night of Pesach, there's many forms of matzah which are permitted in theory for one to eat, but you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. What does that mean? Matzah is one of the five grains that's mixed with an alkaline-based liquid, most commonly water. And what happens is, when alkaline comes in contact with a chemical called amylase, it triggers a reaction. The reaction in Hebrew is called chimutz. In English, we call this a process of rising or fermentation. And what you would call the symptoms of chimutz is when little air pockets start to appear. So first, the alkaline melts the flour, the particles of flour, they melt. They meld, they become one with the alkaline, and it creates something called dough. But dough is not chametz. How does it become chametz? That has to be left to rise. If it's left to its own devices, it can rise. By the way, what happens if you beat up the dough constantly? Keep smacking it down. It doesn't rise. You keep impeding the process. When the Jewish people were leaving Mitzrayim, they were beating the dough. They were so afraid that it shouldn't turn into matzah. And then miraculously, it was matzah. We say it like the sun baked it. There is a possibility of this happening in less than 18 minutes if you use hot water. But as a rule, if the water is cool water, it can't happen in less than 18 minutes. So what do we do before 18 minutes elapses? We make a shidduch. We introduce the water to the matzah. They have a fantastic relationship. Like glue, they get along. And they melt together. But then they have if you don't bake them fast, they can become toxic. On Pesach, that is. So we have to knead it, roll it, make holes in it, and get it into the oven before 18 minutes elapses. By the way, most matzahs are baked probably between 5 or 6 minutes, very quickly. So what happens after you bake it? When you bake the matzah, the chemical is dead. You kill the chemical through intense heat, and it cannot rise again. Pun intended. It never rises. Once it's dead, it doesn't rise. There is another way to temporarily kill the process, and that is through freezing. That's why some people think if you freeze people, you can wake them up in 100 years, they'll be alive. Nobody's ever done it, but it's like a science fiction kind of thing. It works for dough, it doesn't work for people. What happens is you freeze it, it stays exactly where it is. It thaws, it expands, becomes chametz. So in theory, today you could have dough, flash freeze it, put it away, and it's not chametz. In theory. Nobody does this, but in theory it could be done. Why am I sharing this with you? Because matzah does not necessarily have to look like the matzah you're used to seeing. If you were to take flour and water and bake it or cook it an intense heat very quickly without letting time go by, what would it be?
Cracker.
A cracker. What else could it be? A donut. A spongy donut. What we call in Hebrew, sufganiyot. What they eat on Pesach. Do you ever make sufganiyot? It's a lot of fun. You should try it one day, one Hanukkah. You take the dough and you throw it into boiling hot oil. Don't stand too close. What happens to the dough when you throw it into boiling hot oil? It expands very quickly, but that's it. It's dead. Now, the sufganiyot that we eat, they're chametz. They taste really good. You have to wait if you want to have a proper sufganiya. Skippy's almond. You can't have matzah as a custom, but for 30 days before Purim and Pesach, and no, you don't have shmura matzah, you don't have any matzah from now until after Pesach, and then you can eat shmura matzah a whole year long until next Purim. Anyway, back to our sufganiyot. So what would happen if a person would make sufganiyot on Pesach? We don't do it, by the way. We don't do anything on Pesach like this because we're afraid, you know, something could be left behind, it didn't get taken care of. But in theory, if you made a sufganiyah on Pesach, what would happen? It would be a kosher for Passover sufganiyah. What would happen if you make an omelet like a pancake on Pesach? You mix the flour and water and throw it onto the flame, throw it onto the fire. A flat bread. Sometimes they have these very, very thin like wafers, thin, soft wafers. So you could eat those on Pesach, at least in theory. But you can't fulfill the mitzvah of matzah on the night of Pesach with those things. Why? Because it says, lechem oni, poor bread, and poor bread, excuse me, has to have two qualities. So the Gemara says, we have a braisa. This is actually a Tosefta. It's found in the second chapter of the Tosefta. This is the Mishnah genre codicil of Masechet Pesachim. In the 13th entry, it says like this. Hasufganin. What are sufganin? I give you two. One guess. What do you think sufganin are? Sufganiyot. Yeah. Sufganin. Sponge cake. Spongy matzah. Vaduvshonim. So spongy matzah is not really called lechem. It's a donut. A donut is not bread. Nobody makes donut sandwiches. It's not sandwich. It's not bread. And what about duvshoniyot? Duvshonin are flour that is so sweetened with oil and honey that you could call it bread, but it's very rich bread. What did Marie Antoinette say? They don't have bread? Let them eat cake. You never heard that? It's a crazy lady. Let them eat cake. In other words, they were so poor, they don't have bread. No bread, eat cake. This is like cake. It's rich man's bread. How could you eat honey sweetened matzah on the night of Pesach? That's not poor man's bread. What do you think, that the Jewish people left Mitzrayim with honey glazed matzah? No, of course not. So it may be bread, but it's not oni, it's not poor man. And then there's iskritin. Iskritin is like a very, very thin wafer, like a pancake, very, very thin. It's made like from you take a doughy mixture, but with like a liquid dough, and you pour it in a frying pan, and it comes out like this, very, very thin, like lakshin. So you can't fulfill the mitzvah. So the Mishnah says, Adam emala kreisim mehen, you can fill yourself up on them, eat as much as you want, ubavad, but the main thing is, shayechol kezayis matzah ba'acharoino, you must eat a kezayis of matzah at the end. So now we turn the page onto page Kufchof. Say, aha! You have to eat a kezayis matzah on the end. But berishoino, in the beginning of the meal, loy. don't eat the kosher matzah, so to speak. The kosher matzah has to be eaten only at the end, like Shmuel. So the Gemara says this is not a proof. Maybe loy mi boyle kamar. The Gemara said not only this. What the Gemara meant to say is, if you ate the matzah in the beginning, you certainly ate it with an appetite because you were hungry. However, if you're going to eat it at the end, and you ate all kinds of sufganiyot, you know, the kid comes to the Pesach Hanukkah party, and he eats like 3 dozen sufganiyot. You feel sick to his stomach. You eat sufganiyot, you're not going to have room. Maybe you're going to eat after your stuffed. It's not even called eating. It's not halachic eating. It's stuffing yourself like a goose. It's not normal. So you say, maybe we're afraid that people, it's kamash malan. No, you can eat the matzah at the end as well. In other words, the Gemara says, this proof is not a proof. We can understand the Tosefta in both ways. But the bottom line is this. We may not have a second proof, but we have a clear ruling. The ruling says that which applies to the concept of the Korban Pesach applies to the concept of the matzah that's eaten at the end as well. And that, my dear friends, is a nice little snippet from the Gemara in Meseches Psachim that speaks about the aftertaste of the matzahs and the Korban Pesach. Gives you a little bit of a deeper understanding as to what's going on and how we are supposed to conclude our meal on Pesach night. May Hashem help us that we be zoicha, that this year we fulfill this Mishnah and Halacha not with matzah, but in Mirtz Hashem with the Korban Pesach, as Mashiach will come long before Pesach will actually arrive. B'mheira u'b'yameinu amen. Thank you for joining in person. It's a machaya to speak to people instead of to the walls for the first time in 2 years. And thank you for joining online. If I wasn't looking at the camera the whole time, it was people to look at, you know. So tempting. Anyway, we're going to continue the online as well. And if you aren't yet, please subscribe. youtube.com/Rabbi Mendel Kaplan. I look forward to seeing you back. Have a beautiful evening. Sei gesund. Good Shabbos.
So we'll say Afikom.
Goodbye.
It's the end. Say goodbye. It was interesting.